Welcome to the Hoodoo and Chill Podcast, the number one hoodoo and spirituality-based podcast bringing awareness to African-American spirituality in a wide range of thought-provoking topics. I am Papa Seer, your host, your narrator, and your storyteller. Before the show begins, make sure you're subscribed or following the show so you don't miss out on any episodes. And as always, donations of love keep our podcast alive and give us the ability to upgrade the show, enhance our content, and most importantly, do what we love. You can use any link in the description to send your donation of love today. Now, let's start the show. The thing that the slave brought with him was his religion. You do not need to go to Africa to find it. During the hundreds of years that slavery in America held the Negro crushed, degraded, and apart, his master could deprive him of his manhood, his wife, his child, the fruits of toil, and even his life. But there was one thing of which he could not deprive him: his faith in his religion. Not only did this religion endure under slavery, it grew. It was a secret religion that lurked thinly covered in slavery days, and that lurks today beneath the Negro's Christian profession as a white art, and among the non-professors as a black art. A memory of the revenges of his African ancestors. A secret fraternity among slaves of far distant plantations with words and signs. The lifting of a finger, the twitch of an eyelid. Suspected, but never understood by the white master. Which as a superstition has spread itself among our ignorant white masses as the hoodoo, voodoo, or obia. Is simply African fetishism transplanted to American soil. Dr. Nassau, 1904. Good morning and grand rising, or if you are where I am, good evening and grand rising. We are here with another episode of the Hoodoo and Chill Podcast. I am Papa Seer, your host, your narrator, and your storyteller for this evening. Today's show is amazing. I have done so much research, really done my best efforts to present you guys with an amazing potluck, I would like to say, of information as it relates to this topic. Today, we are speaking on the practice of ophiolatry, or the worship or veneration of the sacredness of serpents, also known as snakes. We are going to focus today on African python worship, specifically as it relates to the area of West Africa, Nigeria, and Benin. This topic is special to me because snakes, specifically pythons, hold a very, very special place in my heart. But not only that, we see so much depiction of snakes, specifically pythons, all over spirituality, especially as it relates to the occult or anything regarding hoodoo, voodoo, or just African-American spirituality in general. If you haven't noticed, the python is synonymous with all of our cultures, okay? And there are so many deities that you see associated with the python. I mean, there are depictions of Mami Wata holding a snake. There are pictures of Baron holding a snake. Dambala is a python. You know, it goes on. But has anyone ever really stopped to just think and ask themselves, what is the origins of this? Where does this derive from? Who were the people that actually venerated snakes, and why? What do they represent? Well, search no further. I've done the research for you. All you have to do today is stick through this show to the end of it. I've taken the liberty of breaking this up into four main talking points: origin, history, personal experiences, how the slave trade influenced this, and how this also opens up the echoes and the whispers of voodoo culture, specifically as it relates to Louisiana and also Haiti. Today, my friends, is definitely going to be a dynamic show, and we're going to shed a light on a lot of things that I'm pretty sure a lot of you were not aware of, okay? So if you haven't gotten you something to drink, if you haven't gotten you something to eat, if you're in your car going to work, okay, we want you to relax, we want you to chill while you have the time. This is Who Doin' Chill, my friends. Let's start the show. The image of the serpent, specifically the African python, has become synonymous with various religions, traditions, and depictions of spirits or deities. The image of the python is present with depictions of Mami Wata, Dambala, the Baron, Achumare, the biblical Eve, and is the consistent representation for all things occult. But I ask you, have you ever thought of the origin of python veneration? How did it begin? Where did it all start and why? Or have you ever thought to question yourself how an animal with no natural relation to the Americas has become so engulfed and synonymous with ATRs in African American spirituality? In West Africa, the python embodies a superhuman being, a god of war, the spirit of water, the patron of agriculture, as well as the goddess of fertility. Now, my first obsession with pythons or snakes, I think, began as a child. Just watching any type of documentary I could on snakes, king cobras, what have you. But there was always something just very, very stick out or different, I would say, as it relates to constrictors. And in another, you know, group setting, we were having the conversation on the difference between snakes and serpents. And just, you know, like their biblical implication. And me personally, I said, you know, I do think that pythons are serpents. I don't think that they're snakes. I think that there's something distinctly different about a python. Just looking at them, the way they move, the way they stare at you. Looking at these reptiles, you are literally staring at the ancient souls and whispers of a very esoteric deity. Well, this tradition or this religion, let's say that this religion did not start in West Africa. This is a tradition. This is a religion that migrated from the lands of East Africa. Now, theory has it that the original python worshippers were people who derived from the Nubian lands and also Egypt. The theory is also that the birth of this particular cult that migrated to West Africa, specifically in Benin, they came out of the lands of Uganda. So before I go any further and offer any more of my own opinions, theories, and definitely theology, I would like to read to you an excerpt from William Bosman, the chief factor for the Dutch at the castle of St. George in De Alima in 1700. He was a slave trader. However, he does offer us a very, very in-depth account on his experiences with the natives and the indigenous people who were affiliated with the python cult of West Africa. It is certain that his countrymen had a faint idea of the true God and ascribed to him the attributes of the Almighty. They believed that he created the universe and therefore vastly prefer him before their idol gods, but yet they do not pray to him or offer any sacrifices to him, for which they have given the following reason. God, they say, is too high exalted above us and too great to trouble himself or to think of mankind. Wherefore he commits the government of the world to their idols, their principal gods, which are owned for such throughout the whole country, are of three sorts. First, a certain sort of snakes who possesses the chief rank among their gods. They invoke the snake in excessive wet or barren seasons, on all occasions relating to the government, and the preservation of their cattle, or rather, in one word, in all necessities and difficulties, in which they do not apply their new batch of gods, and for this very reason offer very great offerings, especially from the king. The snake house is situated about 2 miles from the king's village and built under a very lofty tree, in which they say the chief and the largest of all the snakes resides. He is sort of a grandfather to all the rest, and is as thick as a man and of an unmeasurable length. He must also be very old, for they report that they found him in a great number of years past, by the reasons of the wickedness of men, he left another country to come to them, at which being overjoyed, they welcomed their new come god with all expressible signs of reverence and big veneration, and carried him upon a silken carpet to the snake house where he is at present. The reverence and respect which the Negroes preserve for the snake is so great that if a black should barely touch one with a stick or any otherwise hurt him, he is a dead man and certainly condemned to the flames. An English captain, having landed some of his men and part of his cargo, found a snake in their house, which they immediately killed without the least scruple, and not doubting they had done a good work, they threw out the dead snake at their door. When the Negroes found the snake in the morning, the English were prevented from questioning what they had done, and in fact ascribed to honor themselves. This infuriated the natives, and they furiously fell on the English, killed them, and burned their house and their goods. The Hoodoo and Chill Podcast will return after this short ad break. Why make another major decision without knowing the outcome beforehand? Would you like to know where your relationship is headed or what the future holds in store for you? My name is Papa Seer, and I want to assist you in making all the right decisions so that you, yes you, may live your best life. Are you seeking a new career? Does your love life need insight? Or maybe you want to connect with your ancestors or past loved ones. The realm of divination holds all the answers to your fortune. Allow me to use some of my abilities, bone reading, cartomancy, tarot, and mediumship to uncover the answers to your future. Go to hoodooconjurerootwork.com under classes and services to book your appointment today. Your spirit guides are waiting to speak with you. That's hoodooconjurerootwork.com to uncover your destiny today. That excerpt, although short, is still powerful indeed, because it gives us such a firsthand descriptive account on the inner workings of this religious cult of the Python. What stuck out to me first initially were the three different type of deity archetypes that this particular region had. One, and the main one of course, would be the Python or the serpent. The second would be trees. They considered the trees ancient spirits, as well as deities of water. But the main deity, or the one who held the supreme hierarchy in this pantheon, was the serpent. What is prolific here, and where I think where we first need to focus our attention on, is the importance of the position of the serpent, the Python, in this hierarchy. I don't believe a lot of people realize just how important these deities are, or just how important a python is still to this day in African culture. We've been taught to believe, or we've been shown to believe, through the falsities of Disney and Hollywood, that the python was some type of fetish to represent evil or to intimidate someone, or they were using the snake to do all of these evil charms and magic and invocations, but it was quite the contrary. The python represented protection. The python was a tool of divination. The type python was a medium for the spirits. The python in some cults was not considered a deity, but rather a messenger of the ancestors of the Orisha, the Loa, what have you. So they played a very, very high importance in this society. Now, the logic of this is that the pythons also kept down the rodent population. These were farming societies. They depended heavily on their crops, on their grain. And the rat population terrorized their crops. So having these pythons around, or even just close to their food or their granaries, these were good omens because they would keep down the rat population. Not to mention, pythons have been used in Egypt for centuries, you know, to keep down rat populations. Another fact of logic was simply these snakes were non-venomous. In this culture, they believe that venomous snakes represented the evil omens, or these were the snakes that harbored ill or evil spirits. However, snakes that had a non-venomous bite, these represented good spirits. In fact, to be bitten by a python was a good omen. It would actually protect you or ward off the venom from a venomous snake bite. It would also ward off or protect you from bad magic or bad juju. These snakes were kept in such high importance that they had their own temple, okay? They had their own temple house. They had their own set of attendants, which were called fetiche. I hope I'm saying that correctly, fetiche. And it meant fetish worker or priest of the fetish, meaning that these individuals knew how to communicate with the snake. They knew all of the ritual rites of divination and also invocation to work with these snakes as it related to ceremonial rites. These snakes, these pythons, they were married, okay? They had wives. They had young girls who would devote their lives to being mistresses or wives of these pythons. It was against the law, as it is today, still against the law, to harm one of these snakes. Even to touch them with a stick and it caused harm with a snake, they would burn you alive. Okay, so it just goes to show you how important and how serious they were about these deities. The area that we are focused on in this episode is an area in southern Benin along the coast known as Ouidah. For those of you who have studied the transatlantic slave trade, or history in general, Ouidah is prolific as it relates to this topic, because this is where we find the Doors of No Return. This is where we find a lot of history as it relates to the transatlantic slave trade and the involvement with the Portuguese. And also, this is where the Temple of the Python still stands to this day. Now, as a place of Vodun exploration as well as pilgrimage, it's also a tourist site for those of you who are ever in the area of southern Benin and you want to go visit the Temple of the Python. This is very much a Vodun temple, and the Temple of the Python has its very own hierarchy. Now, my belief and my theory is that before this was ever synchronized with Vodun, the temple or the cult of the python was a religion on its own. Okay, we don't really see the synchronicity into Vodun and Orishas until later. All right. So right now we're just focused on the temple. And we see here at the temple that there's a hierarchy established specifically for the pythons. Okay. And there are actual living pythons right now to this day at this temple. There are historical accounts where as many as 250 to 300 were kept there at one time. These snakes are tended to by priests and their priestesses, okay? If they wander into people's homes in the villages, this is a sign of good luck. This is a good omen. And people are not to remove the snakes. They are to call the priest or the priestess, and they are to come remove the snakes and immediately take these serpents back into the temple. But what you will find in this culture is that most people do not remove the serpents from their home. If a python happens to slither in their home while they're eating dinner, they welcome it as a guest. They give it offerings. They make ritual to the serpent. Like, this is a really big deal for them. Now, the myths of this temple, which I personally, I don't believe these are myths. I believe that this is just, you know, spiritual fact, is that the snakes leave every single night and they return to their temple every single morning. So these snakes, all of these pythons, whether they are 25 pythons in the temple at one time or even 250, they are not encaged or secluded. In fact, the snakes roam freely. The priests pick them up and handle them freely. There are absolutely no restrictions on these serpents. If anything, most people account that the snakes are treated better than most of the humans in the village. So a lot of this information that we have written in text comes from slave traders of the time, French and Portuguese men who had ventured into the interiors and the coastline of Africa to do their bidding. This is important because in a lot of these texts, and this goes to show you just how important and how powerful this cult and this religion was, the slave traders had to follow the laws as well. This was very, very interesting and odd to me as well, because it just tears down a lot of the depiction that we have of the American or the transatlantic slave trade. Because as I was reading a lot of these journals from these slave traders who spent time and lived amongst these people, they made a lot of accounts of some of their fellow soldiers who had killed snakes, and then they were either killed themselves or they were jailed, they were beaten, set on fire, that the same rules that the locals had to follow, the slave traders had to follow. So history doesn't tell us that, you know, they have this depiction that the slave traders went into Africa and just forcefully took these people, as we know that is not what happened, that this there was a lot of bargaining going on amongst the people of the land as well. This is important because this is where we open up the doors of the python cult being synchronized with Vodun. The people of this region themselves were involved in the slave trade. This is why the slave traders were living amongst them. They were trading with them. They were sending people into the interior to get Africans to sell to the Europeans. Well, the people of the Dahomey region were not too happy about this. In fact, the city of Ouidah was standing in the way of the Dahomey people for basically dominating the slave trade in this region. There was a civil war between the Dahomey people and also the people, or the, you know, the region of Ouidah. The Dahomey people won and they took over the city, which would in turn mean that they would take over the temple and the serpents and everything as well. Well, what we find here is that they do not do away with the snake cult worship. For those of you who know anything about the history of voodoo or voodoo culture, it is derivative and derives from the Dahomey region of Benin in Nigeria. So when the Dahomey people moved into this region, they did not dismantle this religion or this cult that already existed for centuries. In fact, the exact opposite occurs. They synchronize their religion with voodoo. They synchronize their heritage and their cultures together, and they become banded as one people. So the original peoples of Ouidah, the original cult or the serpent cult of Ouidah, is now synchronized with the Dahomey people who have conquered them through civil war. Well, in the later 1700s, this is where we start to see the influx of people from this region being taken into Haiti, as well as the region of Louisiana as well. And this is where we start to open up the doors for the synchronicity of the python being relative to traditions in the Americas. You know, it just baffles me because I've seen, you know, pythons in so many scary movies, at so many occult shops. I mean, like this figure, this representation of blackness, to be honest with you, and also Africa, we see it synchronized with so many things of evil, of the occult. And this was totally not what this original cult or what the serpent or the python represented for the peoples of Africa. But as I stated, once we start to see the peoples from the Dahomey region being taken into slavery, into Haiti, into the Louisiana region, this is where all of the python snake culture becomes intersected with the culture of the Americas. Once again, pythons, or, you know, these particular pythons are not native to the Americas whatsoever. The bigger picture here is that for many of us that have this epiphany or this connection with pythons or serpents, it only makes sense because it's in your blood, it's in your culture. This is something that's been going on in West Africa for centuries. Now, we've seen and heard the stories of Marie Laveau dancing in Congo Square with her serpent, her python, Grand Zombie. And, you know, I wonder, has any of you ever thought, like, where did she get a python from? You know, how would she even know how to handle it, or who taught her this? This was a tradition that came from Africa, and it wasn't something evil. It was something that was a part of the people's everyday lives. And to go further into this, to me, I think it shows just such a balance and a respect for nature. Most of us feel like, you know, a balance and a respect for nature is going and sitting in our front yard, you know, with a glass of tea or whatever, and connecting with the breeze. But here you have a whole entire culture, a city of people who are living amongst pythons, okay, who trusted nature, who respected nature. And it goes to show you that humans and animals can coexist if we learn to respect first nature, and then nature can learn to gain a respect for us. Now, what I won't do is sugarcoat this and try to make it seem as if this entire cult, every single aspect of it, was just love and light. It was all, you know, sugar and plum fairies. Not the truth. There are some very, very, what some people would consider, dark elements of this cult. I mean, this was something that really was integrated into their lives. They really believed in this. There are accounts of some of the serpents eating children, and this would be considered a good omen because then that child would be taken to another life and it would be good for them. But like, if the child were being strangled by a serpent, the parent wouldn't stop it because they considered this to be a good omen, you know, by the serpent. There were accounts of people sleeping at night and waking up to 10-foot pythons crawling all over them. And you better not kill it, or else you'd find yourself in a world of trouble. Like, they would literally burn you alive, okay? There are a lot of elements to this. As with anything, there's a left hand, there's a right hand, and we always have to find balance and what works for us in this. I personally, what I take from this is a different respect when I see the serpent, especially the python. And what I take from this is just another something that's been stolen from Africa, that's been stolen from Black people, and that's been watered down, fetishized, and, you know, all of this sacredness has been stripped from it. And now when we see serpents or when we see pythons, we immediately arbitrate them to something evil. We automatically arbitrate this to something having to do with Black magic, when truthfully, what you're looking at is an animal who represented everyday life, an animal who represented everyday Black life, an animal who represented the balance between the spirits and the physical, an animal who represented balance between nature and human beings. And it's so sad that the Bible demonizes serpents the way they do. But hey, that's just the world that we live in. You know, I really could sit here all day and just really go into more layers of the serpent cult of Africa. Unfortunately, we don't have that much podcasting time to do that. But what I do want to leave you all with is to do your research and to do your history on something. I think that the serpent cult and, you know, this version of spirituality from Africa really does wake up a lot of different things. It gives you a different depiction of slavery, that, you know, there are lies, a lot of lies still being told to us, that this whole notion of, you know, Europeans forcibly making their way into Africa and just snatching everybody up is not 100% true. There was a lot of bargaining going on, and there was a lot of selling of each other going on as well. I said what I said, do your history and don't argue with me, okay? But anyway, I hope you all took something from this. I hope that I was able to share some light on you, especially to those of you who are on the practice of or on the journey of voodoo. You know, I hope I was able to shed a little history and a little light on the religion, even though myself am not a voodoo practitioner. I do 100% respect the religion. And if I made any mistakes, I am always open to constructive criticism in a beautiful way. But if you did take something from this, we would love to hear from you. Leave us a message as well as a 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. And make sure that you are subscribed so that you don't miss out on our next episode. As always, my people, I think that you are amazing. I think that you are blessed. I think that your life has yet to unfold for you the way that it needs to. You're just at the beginning of your journey, and there's so much more for you to learn. What you should take from today's message is that there's always more to something than what meets the eye. That we should always do our history, and that we shouldn't just jump into something without even understanding all of the sacredness behind it. And the more you research, my people, the more you learn. So study, 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 and learn, learn, learn. It's only gonna make you a better practitioner. Remember, you are strong, you are powerful, you are among the best of the best. You're history, your lineage, and your bloodline is divine, my people. I bless your hands as you go out today. I bless your feet. May your hands be like the Midas touch. May all the things that you lay your hands on, may they materialize as if it were gold, as if you had the Midas touch, my people. I send you out today in love, and most importantly, I send you out in protection. And with that, my people, I release you into the atmosphere. Thanks for listening to the Hoodoo and Chill podcast. Be sure to follow and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a 5-star rating and let us know how much you enjoyed the show. As always, donations of love keep our podcast alive and give us the ability to enhance our content. Please use one of the donation links in the description to send a donation of love today. And we'll see you on the next episode of Hoodoo and Chill.